Welcome to Five Strike Weekly. This week we talk about how we put down the kitties, if we have enough depth to topple Toronto, and we get into your burning questions in the mailbag. We get into all that and more coming up. And wherever it is you get your pods, subscribe, share, and leave us a good rating. Welcome to the show, Five Strike Fam. I'm AJ, and this is Michael. And the Resurgence Kit made its MLS debut, and LA United took care of business versus the Kitties, winning 2-0 on the night. Yeah, it was a good scoreline, but the performance left a little bit to be desired for sure. But yeah, we were very clinical on the night. And ultimately, you know, the 3 points is what matters. But, you know, there is an aspect of it that, for me, I want to see a little bit, you know, something that's a little bit more replicable. But, yeah, did you, you know, have some overarching thoughts on this match?
Yeah, I mean, the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And I think we're starting to see things go back to a little bit of normalcy in that Atlanta United is back to beating Orlando City. So that's great to see. You love to see it. And hopefully it's, you know, it's foretelling of things to come with our relationship with the Disney Kitties.
Indeed. Because, yeah, you know, a lot of pundits had them finishing maybe Supporter Shield winners, you know, maybe really high up in the standings. I mean, it still could be a possibility that, yeah, they could finish high in the standings. But Supporter Shield, that's probably gone. But, and that I'm happy about for sure. But, yeah, in terms of the performance, yeah, it's just there was a lot of moments where, yeah, there were some changes. I think that Oscar Pereira was able to make that made it a little bit more difficult for us. Slash, yeah, we looked a little lost at times during the match, but we were able to, yeah, even as Pineda said it after the match, yeah, he thought we were grinding, quote, fighting, competing, and never giving up, and the players did well. Some positives, but we have the reminder that we need to do better, end quote. And yeah, I think it very much is kind of indicative of what we were saying in the live post-match fan reactions that we did immediately right after the match. In that, yeah, I mean, you know, there were some fans that either that came on or in the comments that were questioning, like, shouldn't we be happy that we won? And absolutely, yeah, you know, we're always happy that we get the 3 points, but there is, like I said, the performance that needs to show that we can do it time and time again, and I don't think this was the performance that would indicate that. There were some times where, you know, I think defensively we showed the stoutness, but in attack and the connectivity between the lines, I mean, I think we saw probably one of the worst matches from Thiago Almada, that's for sure. I think the preseason that he didn't have with the team really reared its head here. You know, but the connection between, you know, our forwards, that was pretty good. I think there was, you know, there was a level of that where, you know, Saba, maybe because he was spurned for the Georgia national team call-up, you know, definitely looked motivated, a different man a little bit at times. And Yakumakis always looks motivated. And, you know, I think he was far and away the man of the match here, even though, yeah, Saba got some recognition inside the stadium. In terms of getting that golden spike. But, you know, it is, I think, you know, where Silva, like, at times he was bright, but there were some times he was also almost just giving the ball away a little too loosely. And, you know, a little bit, maybe too much flair instead of the simplicity. But, yeah, I mean, this first goal from from Saba. I mean, just a touch of class from Yorgos Giakoumakis outside of the boot. I don't think one of our strikers has ever given a better assist, actually. I can't think of it, because it is just put on a dime, put on a plate. Just the weight of the pass, the difficulty of the pass, and basically Saba, while still having something to do here, he was able to be put into just a really good scoring position. And yeah, taking that touch that pretty much eliminates his man, and then at that near post, able to beat Galese, who, lo and behold, on another one at that night, just very annoying, but beats him on the far post. But
he made one mistake. Made one mistake that game, and that was it.
Yeah, that was it. Because I would say the second goal, you know, we'll get to it, but. No, he never had a chance. That's nope. You know, that's not on Galese. This one, nope. Maybe, because he probably shouldn't have hugged his post that much, but he did. Lapsenice pretty much just as finessed of a shot as you could. He almost dribbled it in.
He didn't respect Saba at all. He thought, I'm just going to cover the real super close range, near post, and then I'm going to dare him to slot it in the far post. And Saab was like, okay, no problem.
thank you. Yeah, you just gave acres of the net for him. And yeah, he knew exactly what to do with it. And it was Saab time. And much credit to Mike Conti for that call, actually. Like, listen to all y'all, it's Sabah time. Solid. Very
it's
solid.
It's sabotage.
Yeah. Or sabotage, that's right. Yeah. But yeah, and so, the rest of that first half, maybe not as good. Maybe not as good as that goal. Definitely not as good as that goal, I would say. But we also had some chances I would say, yeah, it was pretty much a pretty back-and-forth match. I was on Goals TV, and Jose from Goals TV called Orlando a little toothless, which, okay, maybe in the final third, yeah, but I still think that they made things a little bit difficult for us, too. Like, I think there was some credit that needed to be given to Orlando from a, I think, defensive standpoint, that they were able to cause some problems for us in some areas, but also... They were very physical with us. Almost to the degree of, we complained like hell after the match on those live post-match fan reactions, because, I mean, I think with good reason. This center ref allowed a lot of things to go for Orlando. And on the flip side, Atlanta had to get 5 yellows to their 1. And then also you have the aspect of, I feel like he felt the pressure from the fans. He definitely was getting just trounced. I mean, ref, you suck was ringing throughout. And, I don't think he's... This occasion was too big for him. Him being probably USL or lower in terms of a ref. I think he's from the USL. But, I mean, he let it affect him. And that much was clear. There was some bias. I think I'm a person that calls it really very much like it is. It just did not feel like it was a very bipartisan match that was called. But, yeah. I know we talked about it a little bit during the live post-match, but you have some thoughts on, up to this point?
Yeah, I mean, I've actually a lot of thoughts, but like this specifically on the refs, we'll stay for a minute. I did hear something about like, that could be perhaps, this is speculation, I think, that the week before, prior, there was like a lot of red cards given out. by these, you know, replacement refs. And maybe speculation again here, so take it with a grain of salt, that there was word from on high to maybe cut down on all the red cards that are being thrown out all willy-nilly. So maybe that's why we didn't, he was hesitant to give out a yellow or a red card when there was so many yellows. And I honestly think the Swede on Orlando probably should have seen red for grabbing at the neck slash face area, which, you know, is pretty much an instant red. So yeah, I think that's probably what should have happened, and we were pretty annoyed about that in the post game. But you know, it's you could also, they could review it, but apparently they didn't think there was anything wrong with it, so all above board, I guess.
And that's the thing, it's well, it's not all above board, I feel like, because yeah, when the refs, it's like, yeah, VAR or otherwise, they're all wrong. I mean, it is, you know, it's a cause for concern because, well, players were getting injured. Players yeah. were, you know, they absolutely are not being protected at this point. And, okay, sure, it might happen to another team or it might, you know, like, that's the thing. It will happen to us. And so that quality, that standard needs to be raised. Otherwise, yeah, the next time it happens, well, yeah, you know, I'm not going to just laugh at it and just be like, oh, brush it under the rug. Like, oh, yeah, you know, haha, it happened to Orlando or whatever or whomever. Like, because it's actually very hypocritical when it does happen to us. And
right. I was, you know, quiet when they came for Orlando. I was quiet.
Yeah.
They right. came for Houston.
Exactly. But then, you know, and so it's just yeah. like, you know, you got to be consistent. And, you know, I'm going to complain if it's biased or not. And so, I mean, you know, it is what it is. But, I mean, yeah. When Shauna Silva also gets a yellow for no reason, you know, in that incident where Janssen...
For being mad that the ref yeah. didn't, like, penalize him more. Like, that's ridiculous to give him yeah, a yellow.
Exactly. And it's not like I didn't see him throw a yellow, you know, type of, like, you know, the... this... what do you call it? The gesture. You know, which would... Yes, that would deserve a yellow. And if he did, okay. But I don't recall that. And... I mean, it's just frankly, like, it's, yeah, the lockout for the refs, this is what it is. Like, there's levels to this. It can get worse. Like, these replacement refs also can get worse. And, yeah, so, you know, if we're talking about, which we'll talk about, like, just the standards, man, these are lowering standards. Mind you, Messi is in this league right now, and we have replacement refs.
Such a bad one.
Yeah. What? Anyway, so let's move on into the second half, and Lapsenidze and Brooks Lennon, they were able to link up here, and yeah, Saba, he found a through ball for Brooks Lennon for our second goal here, and Lennon. Man, I don't think I've seen him skin a man so hard. It's that whole Calvin Harris meme.
Yeah, I think he's still sliding. If you can exactly, hear it, if you listen exactly. closely, you might be able to still hear him.
Yeah, it's, man, like, it's the Rainbow Road. He's just gone, and the defender, like, who knows where he is now, but. But Lennon, he was able to beat him twice, lay it off to Yakumakis outside of the box. Who, Yakumakis, I think if you watch the play beforehand, he's got this wherewithal, and he's got that swagger right now that he can score from anywhere. Like, he definitely set up shop outside of the box to create some space for himself, and then he launches this, kisses that underneath the. The crossbar, and it is an unbeatable goal. I mean, Galese, like I said earlier, couldn't do anything about it. Yeah, under the crossbar and in, and Giacomakis, he's fist pumping, kind of that lower fist pumping all the way into the corner. And yeah, you know, there's one part of me that's, in terms of the turf, that makes me sad, is I'd love a knee slide, and he used to do knee slides a lot with Celtic, and you can tell he's like maybe wanting to do it, but it's that rug burn that will inevitably happen. That like I love when the whole team just knee slides. Man, so good. But alas, yeah, it's a, you know, it's a great goal, and we're up 2-0.
Just need to score away on Grassmore.
I know, exactly. It's just yeah, that's a whole other thing which we'll talk about, but yeah, scoring away, yeah, well, might be pie in the sky sometimes. But yeah, it basically, this goal got him back into the Golden Boot race. He shares a lead of it, but it's his fourth goal of the season. And yeah, I mean, I think a lot of good things, you know, happened in this match, which we'll get to, you know, kind of in the news. But I think there were some moments that also were very concerning. I mean, Guzan went down. Maybe it was a hamstring or something. Who knows? But yeah, like the trainers had to come onto the pitch.
Time is running out for him. It just seems like any day now.
Right. It was a little bit odd. It was like I said on the post-match, I was like, man, that'd be a tough way to go. Like, that is not how I want Brad Guzan to really lose his spot here. Because we know Josh Cohen is going to be he's the heir apparent. But this would be a harsh way. And thankfully it wasn't. But, you know, he wasn't the only player that, really felt it. Because, yeah, we basically had two of our defenders had to go off. And, I mean,
I think most of our team was going to, you know, kind of be feeling it the next day after this game. Because they, like you said at the outset, Orlando played us tough and hard and physical. And it was tough to see. A lot of our guys looked like they were going down and they could have had potential injuries. We find out later that one actually did. It was not great. It was a gutsy win with at cost. So...
yeah,
I don't know if it'd be, you know, it's always worth it to beat the Kitties, but it's like, that's rough when you have your starting defender be out for the foreseeable. So that's not great.
Right, exactly. And so, yeah, Gregerson, I mean, he was shoulder checked into the boards after the whistle. And that's some stuff that, should have been curbed. I mean, there was a little bit of a talking to early on in the match from the ref where, you know, he gave it to both sides of like, okay, yeah, you know, these are warnings or whatever. But I don't feel like there were actual warnings that were judicious. They were definitely, you know, one-sided. But, in terms of some of the... other things that did happen in this match. Pineda, he said after the match that Sabo was impressive, quote-unquote, more aggressive in getting the ball in better areas and tactically, mentally has been getting better. He also mentioned that he rates the way Gigi, not only with his ability to score goals, but he rates him in how he does with his defensive actions as well. And, I mean, Brad Guzan, he said, like, he was frank. He said, to be honest, I don't know if this week was better than last week. He said the performance was good in a sense, but sloppy. Team struggled in stretches to play out of the back. He said, quote, we can be better, end quote. And so, yeah, I think the thing that was good, obviously, besides the goals, Pineda also pointed it out, Muyomba and Slish, said did a great job, quote-unquote, covering the midfield and chasing down Orlando's playmakers. And he credits them for disrupting Orlando's game plan and causing them to get, quote unquote, desperate. So yeah, absolutely. That's definitely a thing that I noticed, that we stymied their playmakers. We didn't allow them to really create rhythm in order to really get clear cut chances. Because while they there were some kind of minor chances, they I believe rattled the crossbar as well. It's ultimately, they did the job that needed to be done in the midfield, which wasn't always done last year. That's for damn sure. But, Pineda also mentioned the team needing to create a habit of maintaining clean sheets. And, he said that the team did well in a low block while holding the lead, made the call to play in a back five, and some subs were due to cramping fitness issues, which, I think that's where it is, where, like we're saying, a little bit of the rough play, a little bit of the whatever it is. It's a little early for the cramping, I feel like, but, I guess they haven't reached the match fitness levels that we want them to be at, and maybe that's the culprit. But, in terms of Pineda and going with the back five, I think it did see out the match. Definitely credit to him for, recognizing that some players, not only fitness-wise, were lacking, but also, we were at a point where we needed to maybe preserve some legs, get some fresher legs to kind of see out the match. And it worked. We were able to.
One thing we talk about sometimes is that, Pineda doesn't like to change formation or adopt a more defensive posture when in a situation that might require it. And I feel like against Orlando in this type of game, which they were controlling the ball, they were possessing the ball, winning that battle a lot more than we were. They were getting a second balls. They were putting a lot more pressure on us in our defensive half. And in order to kind of identify a way to get back at them, through all this pressure, is to then go, well, maybe we should just try and hit them in transition and counter. And we did, and we were lethal at it. And that was great to see, because in the past, there has been times where we've decided to just continue to try and play, slow build up possession and hope for the best, and we just kind of get crushed. And in this case, we decided, five in the back, let's do, hit them on counters, and then our transition game was brutal. I really like to see that. It's similar to watching previous Atlanta United teams in previous seasons, basically be Orlando. They come out, possess the ball, doesn't go anywhere. All of their chances lead to nothing. And the other team just sits there and goes, come on, come at me. Oh, you made one mistake. Now we're just going to send the ball forward. This guy named Sabalovjanice is going to get it and score on you out of nowhere. Or we're going to do a cut back pass to Yorgos and we'll score there. Because it started with Saba and Brooks Lennon just screeching down the sides. It kind of felt good that we weren't the team having this happen to again. We were the ones doing it to them. So at least in that regard, we have it seemed like there's a little bit more versatility in that. The players identified, the coach also identified, as you said, we need to kind of go in that avenue more than the previously held one. And it worked. And it was good to see. Mm-hmm.
And I think it all plays together because, the verticality that we definitely played with a lot in 2017, 2018. I think it was apparent here because it's on the ball, that's where we were. In terms of playing through the lines, it just really wasn't our night. And at home, it's odd. It's not usually the case, but excuse me. And Almada, his off night, I think definitely had a play and a part in this where, you know, Pineda, he mentioned, that the second half after a lackluster performance, or he told Almada in the second half after a lackluster performance that, oh, I wouldn't highlight one player not doing great. I think in general, we were not making the right decisions, the right passes, the right movement. He said, honestly, the first half, he got on the ball. He was very dangerous. It was at the end where he started to feel maybe a little isolated. He had to dribble 3-4 players, and, you know, not many players committing as forward as we were doing in the first half, which, yeah, absolutely, that was the case. But there was also a counterattack that he was definitely a little bit indecisive as well, where he probably should have just taken the shot on his right. Instead, he took an extra touch to put it on his left to maybe pass it when he was in the box. Just shoot.
Yeah, call me crazy, but you should never be trying to dribble 4 players. Like, yeah. I don't care if you're all alone by yourself in the opponent's half. You shouldn't be trying to do that. If you're all alone, I don't know, sprint to the corner or something. Wait for reinforcements, delay, or just like do one of his famous long crosses to the side of the field, or look for the guy that's eventually coming if they are taking so long. But they'll eventually come if they see you up there needing help. You shouldn't ever be trying to dribble 4 players. It's just that's just not the play.
Yeah, it was shades of bad Ezequiel Barco ball. And yeah, maybe not quite the same actions, but it was that type of, it's that when you're on a team and there's a far and away better player than everybody else. And that is the case. You know, Almada is definitely our best player, but there's no need for him to keep the ball for that long when there's players that are, you know, willing and capable, as runners throughout the match. And so, yeah, it's especially when you have Edwin Mosquera, like, okay, yeah, he's maybe not fantastic on the ball, but he's a runner for you. He's always going to run. And, you know, especially late in that match, you know, I think he was an option. And so, but, Pineda did mention that, eventually we know Thiago's ability on the ball is impressive and he will get better. And yeah, I'm not worried about Almada, but it was not a hallmark match in terms of his career.
And luckily it didn't have to be. That's kind of what I was alluding to earlier, that good teams, when you have an off night, so your best players maybe aren't showing up, something's off, you can still find a way to win. And we did.
Yeah, indeed. So that's back-to-back wins at home. And even though the numbers weren't exactly in our favor for everything, we got the more shots on target, edged it in shots, and our XG was just slightly better. Or like, not slightly better, double. We had the real better chances, to be fair. We probably should have put 2 more away. We mentioned in the post-match, this was a weird one. Like, it could have been 3-4-0, but it also could have been, even less than that to a degree of, where they actually scored one, and it could have been a 2-1 match. It could have been 2-2. Like, it's, there's some luck involved for sure in this one. And, that's where the concern is, for sure. Because, wrapping up a bow on this one, unless you have a final thought.
I hate seeing Galeze just pull out amazing saves like that to keep them in the game. I mean, that was when we were only up by 1 over them. And he was able to deny Derek Williams, like, twice and, like, one other save as well. Like, it was... Because that gave Orlando momentum and confidence to come back into the game. Right. It's like saving a penalty shot. Like, it's just, that was scary to see, because I was like, if this game is going to turn, this is where it will turn. And I was, on the edge of my seat, like, oh gosh, not like this. Please not like this.
Yeah, exactly. The switch in the Matrix, not like this.
Yeah.
But it's... Yeah, the double save, incredible, but also incredibly frustrating. Yeah, that's like Derek Williams, man, those are some good chances.
What does the man have to do?
Right, man. Anyway, yeah, because it's like his two chances were not consecutive double saves, but it was pretty much, I think, one corner after the other. And so it's like, whew, that would have iced it for sure. Completely put it out of reach. But either way, yeah, that puts a bow on this match review. And we will be playing Toronto FC over the weekend, and we'll have that match preview later on in this episode. But let's get into the news and the standings. We are 7th in the East, and goal difference of 4. Of course, the 2 wins and 1 draw. But yeah, we're the only team in the top 9 that have only played 3 matches. Miami, of course, are up top, having played 5. And then have 10 points, but Columbus, same number of points at 4 games played. I think, yeah, Columbus, probably the class of the East. That's going to be difficult to catch them, but hopefully, you know, there will be some sputters for them, because nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect in this league. But, yeah, so far, they are one of pretty much 3 teams that are undefeated, but yeah, Philadelphia rounds it out as a team that's drawn 3 times. You have Nashville that's also drawn 3 times but won once. Cincinnati, I mean, we know Cincinnati is probably going to be pretty good, and then Columbus as well. So but you know, not everyone will make it in terms of unscathed into the next match day for sure. But yeah, so Caleb Wiley, congrats to him. He made his 55th start. That's most starts in all competitions for an Atlanta United homegrown player. I mean, that's amazing. He's only 19. He's only incredible. 19 years old. Yeah. Like, for an Atlanta native as well, I mean, this is going to be incredible. Like, he has the whole just future ahead of him. And, yeah, I mean, it's going to be really, really amazing to see where he can take these levels, you know, health willing. And but Brad Guzan, he also made his 200th appearance, and he marked it with the first clean sheet of the season for Atlanta United. So congrats to Brad Guzan.
And he had a good game. He had some big saves.
He did. Exactly. It was he's been rewinding the clock. I mean, it's one of those, like, even a shot from distance, he was able to cover from on his far post as well. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that's like, you know, it's good. The competition is good. He's thriving off of it, and may it continue. I mean, because really, I only care about Atlanta United winning. And so, like, if it's Josh Cohen or Brad Guzan, it doesn't matter to me. Like, it could be either of them. But also, moving on from that, Yakumakis, he landed on the MLS Team of the Match Day this week for the 2nd straight week. He also was nominated for the MLS Goal of the Match Day and MLS Player of the Match Day again. Unfortunately, he didn't win those, which, I don't know. It's the overhead goal was good. It was a little close, so it's like, but you know, the overhead goals always win when they're there. And you know, St. Louis, they have a lot of fans right now. Like, we don't dominate these polls like we used to. It's a thing. We need to get back to that. But anyway, yeah. Moving on from that, the international window is upon us. But yeah, we're gonna play, obviously. But we have 6 players and also a 7th one that will be missing from the match over the weekend. But the ones on international duty: Luis Abram with Peru, Thiago Almada with Argentina, Ajani Fortune with Trinidad and Tobago, Yorgos Yakomakis with Greece, of course, Bartosz Szysz with Poland, and then Caleb Wiley with the U.S. youth, the U23 squad, actually. And so, yeah, it's going to be it's going to be dire.
Five starters are missing.
Yeah. And a starter from last year as well with Luis Abram. So, I mean, it is you have that. You have also Thiago Almada and Caleb Wiley. They might have a little showdown in the knockout round because of the Olympic soccer tournament. Yeah, basically it's you know, some friendlies for that. But, that could be interesting. But, it's just one of these things. Like, I don't like being club over country, but, this just kind of solidifies it a little bit more, even sometimes, because, you know, the fact that we're playing during this, it just, I have so many qualms, but, I think the bigger thing about this is that how does this, like I've said in previous episodes, how does this grow the league? Because we have way too many issues that cannot be, like, you have all these stars that are not part of the weekend's matches where, okay, even with Messi, like, you have Messi in the league right now, and yes, he's taking, I guess, probably at least one match off because he cannot play with Argentina. Like, he's being rested. Maybe there's an injury or something like that as well. He just is not going with Argentina. So there's a very unlikely instance that he's going to play over the weekend as well. Argentina as a country is just going to be pissed at Tata Martino. And people in Argentina are already pissed at Tata Martino. Let's be real. Like, he's not exactly the most welcome in a lot of parts of Argentina. But, you have this, you have the aspects that, I mean, is this a good advertisement for the league? You have most of your star players that are out. And then you have teams that, the worser teams, they have their star players. So you're almost being punished for having star players. It's just outrageous. Like, it's,
or you can be lucky like Columbus and be like, well, Darlington Abbey just doesn't play for his national team, so you get your best player to just be forever never called away.
Exactly. And that used to be us.
Yeah.
But and it worked out, obviously, because that's what we would take advantage of. But this is,
he played every club game forever and never a national team game.
Exactly. And these are the issues that MLS needs to address.
Yeah. I mean, let me push back for a second, because, in terms of, like, how does this advertise the league? Well, this doesn't, of course, but what is this in service to do? This allows us to have, well, at least not have, but it gives more room for Leagues Cup, which that, in their mind, is the advertisement for the league. So in their mind, we'll sacrifice whatever we got to sacrifice, whether it be, like they talked about, U.S. Open Cup participation, or, we have to play through international breaks. They're willing to do all those types of things in order for Leagues Cup to work, because that's their big payday, and that's their way that they're going to show off Messi to the world.
Right. In which case, the devil's advocate point I get, but, it's about MLS. It's not about Leagues Cup. Like, Leagues Cup is just the competition. That's the...
What's the difference anymore? So, same thing.
I get it. I get it. But it's,
like, they probably like Leagues Cup more than the MLS regular season. Probably brings them in more money.
It probably does, to a degree. And especially when Messi won it. I mean, it's just... It's all gravy for them. But as a fan, I feel like it's... the season ticket holders are punished.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm going to be honest, like the incentive to watch this match over the weekend, it's dampened. Like, we don't have our best players.
And we'll get into it, but Toronto has their whole full power squad, basically. So we're exactly. We're running into a buzzsaw. It's like we're putting kids, our twos essentially, up against Lorenzo Insigne and Federico Bernardeschi. Like, what? What?
Yeah, it's just, man.
We'll get into it.
Yeah exactly. The players that will be playing, it's a, they have a task in front of them. But anyway, so like we alluded to as well, Stian Gregersen, he suffered a meniscus injury against Orlando, and he will be unavailable for Saturday. And apparently there is no timetable yet. That's according to the press conference.
From what the brain trust of all the many doctors who inhabit our Discord, they all gave their opinions about what does this kind of injury mean. And they're like, well, depending on the type of meniscus injury, it can be like 3-5 weeks or something like that, or it can be much longer, depending if it's like a tear or not. So, you know, take that medical advice with a grain of salt, because who knows the credentials of these Discord doctors, but they felt as though they wanted to give their opinion. And it does not bode well. It just concerns me quite a bit. And he's on the new team. He's starting out strong, doing really well. And then this crap happens. It's such a heartbreaker.
It is, especially, I mean, he's our third DP. It's like, it's a curse. Like, we basically, how many times have we had all of our DPs? Like, it's just, it's not often. It is not often. And, it's sad. It's really just sad. I think it's another symptom of kind of how we're being hampered in this league. You know, not just us, just all the teams. But there are reinforcements. And so LA United, they announced on Wednesday that Mexican forward Daniel Rios is coming on loan from Liga MX side Chivas for the duration of the 2024 MLS season. And Rios, he came, he previously has played for Nashville and Charlotte FC. He's got nearly 200 professional appearances, and he holds a green card, and he will occupy a supplemental roster spot. So he's not on high wages. He will not take an international spot. So in terms of depth, you know, it's a pretty shrewd move. Carlos Bocanegra, he mentioned that we have been looking to strengthen our depth in attack and find a proven goal scorer who knows MLS. Daniel is a player we are familiar with from his previous stops in the league. And looking ahead to a busy summer with MLS, US Open Cup, and Leagues Cup, along with the potential to lose several players to both the Euros and Copa America, we believe Daniel brings quality to our team and adds competition to the group. And as well, it's like, you know, you have the Olympics as well. So, so he's a player that 6'1", in terms of the goal scoring prowess. With Nashville, he scored 6 goals in 33 total appearances, rather, and he was their first ever MLS signing. And as well, with Charlotte FC, he made 30 appearances, scored 9 goals across all competitions. So, I mean, it's not a fantastic return, but it is somewhat of a return. 29-year-old, not exactly spring chicken, but he, as a backup, as a player that from the left side in terms of a left footer, gives us some different options. You know, maybe we play 2 up top sometimes. Maybe we can also, at least this week as well, just give a different look and, different parts of the pitch to attack from. So, you know, not the worst if he is able to be match fit and play this weekend. But, yeah, what are your thoughts on Daniel Rios?
I kind of talk about it in reverse order. I don't think he's probably going to play this weekend. Just makes more sense for Pineda to keep his formation that he's been doing, and to keep players in it that have familiarity with it, which is Jamal. So I think we'll see Jamal start in Gigi's spot, but, you know, that'll be for the predicted starting 11 for next game. We'll get into that. But I will say about this guy, it, you know, Daniel, while he was at Chivas, he's only scored one goal in his time there. That's a little concerning, that he's been experiencing a bit of a poverty of goal scoring, a bit of a drought. So hopefully that doesn't follow him here. Hopefully he'll see more kind of the proportion that he had when he was in Nashville or Charlotte, where, you know, he scores some goals, and that's pretty much all we need him for. So hopefully he can do that, and hopefully Chivas is not some kind of, you know, harbinger of bad things to come with him.
Yeah. And just to be clear, when I mentioned two up top, it's more probably later on in the match. But, you know, it's starting a match too. Yeah, I mean, I don't ever see us, I think, starting with two strikers. You know, that's definitely something that would be a pretty helter-skelter from Pineda, which I don't really see him doing that. But
he's a creature of habit.
Yeah, exactly. And frankly, I'm not really sure I want to see that either anyway. But, you know, to start off a match, we need creators, like, more so than... you know, unless maybe it's against a, like, Philadelphia Union with their diamond midfield. But anyway, so, you know, definitely some good depth that hopefully will bear some fruit. But let's move on to LA United 2. They unfortunately fell to Orlando City B 3-2 at Fifth Third Bank Stadium on Saturday afternoon. And yeah, midfielder Javier Armas and defender Efren Morales each claimed their first goal of the season. Which, fun fact about Javier Armas, so Soccer Down Here was able to figure out who put the butter in their coffee. And they revealed that it might be Javier Armas, the LA United 2 player, which, you know, everybody speculated that it might be a first-team player. But, yeah, that's that wrench that gets thrown into the conversation, is that it's an LA United 2 player. No one could have prognosticated. But, yeah, Javier Armas also is doing a vlog on YouTube about his match days. And I believe some of the days in between too. So yeah, definitely check it out. It's definitely some insightful stuff into how their days go. So super cool. But yeah, LA United 2, they will return to action on Sunday. And they will play Carolina Core FC at Fifth Third Bank Stadium. But yeah, so moving on from that. That does it for the news, and it gets us into the mailbag. And you guys send in these questions through IG Story and our Discord. And please continue to do so, and we might answer your question in the future. But the Patreon, the highest level tiers, those members get the priority. And so first up is Drew. He asks, what are you looking for in our depth versus Toronto, specifically Firmino, Jamal, Cobb, and Dax?
For me, I'm looking for them to be able to hold Toronto to a draw. That would be great. That would be a super good result for us. That's pretty much my expectation, my hope. Realistically speaking, I don't know if they'll be able to. However, that to me should be the goal. I think that they can hang their hats on that if that happens, and they should feel proud of themselves. I mean, like, looking at the difference in like money value, talent level, stardom, everything between these two teams that will be going up against each other on Saturday. Like, it's just night and day. So, like, if they can hold to a draw, that would be monumental. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. It's a very astute question from Drew as well, because those probably are the people that are the players they're going to be starting. So yeah, we'll see. But yeah, I mean, definitely from those players. Yeah, I think for me, it's a level of, I think, just it's competence. You know, like, the hope is that they can piece together the lines that because pretty much these guys are going to be the spine of the team. And yeah, I mean, every one of them does not have, besides Dax, I mean, these guys aren't, I guess, a foot with a ton of experience. So, you know, Firmino, Jamal, Ortiari, and Cobb, they're, yeah, you know, it's going to be a thing where, you know, in MLS, they're learning. So, but Gavin asks, does this team have what it takes to get a positive result out of Toronto, such as at least a draw? With the fact that we have two of our best attackers out and best defender injured and away from home makes it a very tough, or makes it very tough. And yeah, go ahead.
Now, I'll say that it's possible we can get a draw. I don't think it's likely, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, like I said, and I think that they should aim for it. Mm-hmm. So that's hope. Fingers crossed that they can do it.
Right. And I think it's this. It's like, in terms of getting a positive result, yeah, if it was a draw or 3 points, I mean, I think it will come from some of our players that, well, I mean, Nick Firmino, it's every time he plays, he's want to score. And I mean, he's a player that's motivated. He has the eye for goal. I mean, I think if anybody, he in terms of contribution to this match, I think he will have something that he wants to prove. Like, he will really try to push for a starting spot. I mean, you know, Sean Da Silva, you know, like, that could be a spot that he could usurp if he plays better in some senses. Now, he might not be an out-and-out winger, but, I mean, if some of the guys are a little loose with their passing, I mean, it's like this. It's like Derek Etienne. You know, now he's a supplemental roster player. Like, even though he's on pretty high wages, like, I mean, if you don't perform, there will be other players that, you know, will come in. So, you know, Sean Da Silva, maybe not the best in terms of starts, but, you know, could be. Firmino could come for a spot here. So
you said 3 points. Let me just address that for a minute.
Sure.
If we win in Toronto against this Toronto team with what we're going to put out there, I will, if the, like, the Toronto's front office puts out like a commemorative, like, you know, match scarf, you know, where it has, you know, Toronto Atlanta on it, and the date or whatever, I will find one and buy one, because there's like, that is a game you have to remember. Like, like, that will be one of the biggest upsets I will have ever seen in MLS if we could find a way to beat Toronto in their own house when they have the star power they have. Granted, yeah, their team has been reeling. They're not, you know, the last couple of years there's been difficulties with them all over their organization, but, you know, there is no reason why they shouldn't win. Like, there really isn't. Like, it would be insanity, in my opinion, if we are able to walk out of there with 3 points. I think a draw is at least conceivable, but man, if we get 3 points, not only will I be ecstatic and screaming from the top of the roof, but if they make one of those commemorative scarves, I'm gonna get one.
Yeah, well, it's usually not the team that makes that. It's usually some street vendor, and it's not really that common in the States, unfortunately. But my God, if they make one, yeah, man, absolutely, you should get it, and yeah, frame that shit. But
What a game if that happens.
Exactly. Okay, next question comes from Josh Cohen fan. With Guzan showing a glimpse of his era coming to a close with the scary scene of another leg injury about to happen, will we see Pineda start Cohen in more games like the USOC and Leagues Cup and even some MLS action? I mean, yeah, I think there might be a cup keeper, you know, in this as well. Like, Josh Cohen probably will start a lot of the cup games, if not, you know, if he doesn't usurp him in terms of Guzan. And if he doesn't, or if he does, then I think you might see the other way around. So, you know,
yeah.
It's one of those, yeah, Guzan's not going to play every single game. That's for sure. But, yeah, you have any thoughts there?
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. I think he's going to, he's going to be a cup keeper unless he steals the job from Brad Guzan, and then Brad Guzan might be then the cup keeper we use for that. So I think that's a perfectly reasonable assessment. I think you can predict, you can kind of put all of your eggs in that basket.
Yeah, I think the real question is when.
Yeah. So,
but next question comes from Candy Dish.
That was an Easter joke, by the way. Nice. Easter's coming up.
Too subtle for me. But yeah, Candy Dish asks, we haven't seen Jamal Tiare really play so much. Now that we need him, is there extra pressure on him? Does he receive extra scrutiny? Along the same lines, if we want to win trophies, we need to have depth. How do we feel about our depth and the way the FO goes about filling those holes?
Yeah, I think there will be more scrutiny on Jamal now that the spotlight will be on him. He knew this was going to be a thing he'd have to do, you know, and this is what he's here to do. This is what he's getting paid to do, is fill in for when Gigi's not here, and hopefully he can, you know, net us some goals and put us above the bar. But now that we have Daniel in, this, I think, ratchets it up even more. And now he's going to feel the pressure even more. And that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. These players, if they're good, if they have a good mentality about it, should want competition, should want challenge, because that's how you grow. That's how you get better as a professional. And that can only help us as a team on the whole.
Right. And that's the thing. It's like, as the saying goes, pressure makes diamonds, but it's also Yorgos Nakamakis. He invites that extra scrutiny. You know, he, him saying they already know me, you know, that type of stuff. It's that bravado that, it forces you to back it up.
Give me the number 7 jersey.
Yeah, exactly. Like, stuff like that. I would hope Tiare embraces it. And yeah,
you kind of have to be if you're wanting to be a striker, in my opinion. I don't, you know, I don't know why you would be in that position if you were, you know, shy of, like, you know, the big lights and all the pressure. So
exactly. Yeah. If you are a, you know, if you're adverse to the limelight, that's probably not the profession for you. It's probably not the position for you, rather. But yeah, no, definitely very, very interesting. But yeah, so those are the questions this week in the mailbag. And yeah, keep sending those, and we might answer your question in the future. But let's get into the match preview then. And 7:30 on Saturday, LA United will face off against Toronto FC. We've talked about a good number of things pertaining to this match, but there are definitely some other things that we need to get to regarding this. But it'll be at BMO Field. Yeah, obviously, like we mentioned, the 6 players called up for the FIFA international window. You know, Stian Gregersen as well being injured. But Toronto FC, yeah, they're on this kind of redemption train a little bit, because last year they were the Wooden Spoon winner. And they
didn't really make the most expensive rosters. Yeah. It's like the most inverse team in the league you could possibly have, like, in terms of result and how much money you spend.
Exactly. And it's wild because, yeah, They didn't really make a lot of high-level additions to the roster over the winter, but Michael Bradley, probably one of their, you know, their legends, he retired after the 2023 season. CJ Sapong also wasn't brought back. Victor Vasquez, another stalwart for them, he now is playing in India. They did bring in Davey Flores and Tyrese Spicer, but yeah, I mean, not a lot. Not a lot of, you know, kind of reinforcements, but they're a team that's somehow, despite what pundits are saying, that they'll finish 14th or 15th, maybe as high as 11th for some. But yeah, they're in the throes of the Eastern Conference, is what most people are thinking. But yeah, their new head coach, John Herdman, he, yeah, he's pulling some magic out right now and maybe getting the best, maybe not the best, but getting better out of these players. And, you know, they're in fifth right now. So the problem is, yeah, we never play really too well at BMO Field. We do not win there. And it's a whole thing. We have some difficulty winning in Canada for whatever reason. And, you know, it's also, yeah, with the press conferences in the lead up to this match, Ronald Hernandez, Jamal Tiare spoke with, you know, the media. And, yeah, he said, or he mentioned that he believes the game against Toronto will be a good chance for other players to show growth. Said, quote, "This is a good opportunity for them and for all of us. We know we are going to miss them because they are important in terms of the other players that had left. But this is football. This is an opportunity for the new guys to show up." And Tiara mentioned, "At the end of the day, everybody on the team is important. The goal is to listen to the coach, maintain your position, and just keep it all together." Not exactly, you know, really encouraging stuff. Just sounds like players that are holding down the fort. But yep, you know, you had mentioned a little bit earlier, but it's just, yeah, these are those words. And yeah, I'm,
it doesn't instill a lot of confidence.
No. I'm concerned. I am more than just concerned. This could be a drubbing. But
I have a meme. Maybe, yeah, I can send it to you. Maybe we can put on this episode or something.
Yeah.
To throw it up on the screen. But I posted it last year. I don't remember where I found it. I posted it last year, where, like, you know, the guys like screaming like, "We were on a break," when, oh, yeah, Columbus beat us like 6-1 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Ross from Friends. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That was, right. That's a great meme, and I'm worried I'm gonna have to break it out again.
Yeah. You might. But yeah, Toronto, in terms of their unavailable players, they pretty much not missing too many players. Only fullback Richie Lauria, and he might miss 3 months with hamstring surgery that he had on March 23rd, and that was announced on Tuesday. But other than that, yeah, you know, no one really from their starting lineup.
I think there's one guy, there's a midfielder that's started for them every game this season so far, but I don't think he's a main cog for them per se.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he's like vital to them, but, like, right, you know, it that's something I guess to pay attention to.
Yeah, well, okay. We'll say two
yeah,
versus our
matter.
Exactly,
yeah.
Two versus our seven, which Steon Gregerson, like I said, with the meniscus injury, and yeah, I mean, it pretty much, it makes actually this starting 11 fairly interesting to predict, and here we are. Let's go. So the you know, going from the back, it might be the easiest from now. Yeah. So Guzan between the sticks, obviously. Same for you. Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
I wouldn't hate if Cohen came out, but yeah, it's going to be Guzan.
Right. And in that back line, well, yeah, I mean, the fullbacks, let's go with those. Who do you think is going to play?
Lennon on the right, Hernandez on the left.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that much is pretty obvious without Wiley. Really, I mean, McFadden maybe, but I think Hernandez kind of has that that backup spot.
Yeah, if covered. He doesn't play now, why is he on the team? Like,
right. Yeah, and it's also like he gave a, you know, a press conference. It's, yeah, it's going to be Ronald Hernandez. Okay, the center backs, who do you think it's going to be?
Cobb and Williams.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, Noah Cobb, I mean, he had a really good preseason. So, yeah. You know, it's not, I'm not really too concerned from a defensive standpoint, but from a building out from the back standpoint, okay. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. He's kind of an unknown quantity. So, you know, it's, but I like the decision making that Noah Cobb has had, and Derek Williams obviously has been pretty solid in the first three matches and the preseason. Getting into the midfield, this is where also it could get interesting. But with the players that are out, probably pretty easy. But Muyamba being one of them. And who's the six in terms of you know, who you think?
I think it's going to be Dax McCarty.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, it's odd. It's you know, you have a lot of players out, but it's almost picking itself. Because of the available players and the experience, I would say. Because, I mean, yeah, you don't really have many other options here. It's really right. It.
Yeah, because like we talked about before, you've, you know, dinged on a few times is that we are lacking at least like one more player in the midfield. So
yeah.
It makes the choice a little bit easier.
Exactly. Which, it's not a good, it's not an embarrassment of riches. It's, yeah, like, When starters go out, you almost want, yeah, you know, like multiple options. But nope, that's not what we have here.
Yeah, I feel like we're like the most deep in like striker right now, feels like.
Yeah, which is super odd. But
yeah,
and then into the wings, I think these pick itself, Saba, Silva.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be... at least the stalwarts in the, at least so far, but yeah, it's the who's gonna play the other midfield role in terms of centrally. I mean, probably going to be Nick Firmino. You think?
Yeah. It could be interesting if like I remember I've heard people talk about Lobjanice possibly like entering in the 10 role or something like that, but. You know, it's that could be interesting, and then throw like Edmund Mascara out on the wing to start things. Like yeah. that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, but I think we'll probably see Firmino. I mean, hell, give him a chance. Why not? It's not like the game matters that much in my eyes. But I mean, this has been a little doom and gloom, but keep in mind, this is not a foregone conclusion. We can absolutely get a result. If we're lucky and we play well and the other team maybe is a little bit off, we can absolutely bankrupt them. So it can happen. We have to watch, see what happens. But like, you know, it's we're up against it though. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, for sure. It's if we smash and grab, yeah, there's a possibility. Are we going to have the lion's share of the possession? I would not bet on it. That's a foolhardy wager, I would say. So no, don't do that if you're a betting man or woman or person. But yeah, up top, what you got?
It's gotta be Jamal. This is his time. This is where you have to, you know, put up or shut up. This is what you get paid for. Hopefully he can produce something. It'd be crazy if it was a miracle and we ended up, you know, smashing and grabbing, but like, I will be okay if we get a draw out of this and he contributes to that result. They all contribute to that result. That would be magnificent, I think. Maybe masterclass in terms of tactics too. Pineda might need to get a, you know, like a hat tipped his direction as well. So we'll see how it ends up, but like this game is, you can get a result here. So we'll see how it filters out.
Right. And yeah, you know, with Pineda saying some of those things post-match that, you know, he's not averse to playing a low block to, yeah, pretty much trying to hit teams on the counter. I mean, I think if there was a match, this is the match to kind of do that, unfortunately. And the real question is, how do we subvert that expectation a little bit? Because, I mean, Toronto is probably expecting that as well. So they're going to have to figure out a way to break us down. The question is if we can stay compact enough, and if we're well drilled enough this week, that we don't get drawn out into positions where we are susceptible to concede. And, yeah. You know,
it can get really ugly if, yeah, like Lorenzo Insigne hits like a screamer from outside the box, isn't it? No one thought to close him down enough, like he kind of did the other week. That can just then all of a sudden now we got to go chase the game, and we're already starting to get drawn out like that. That could spell,
yeah,
really, really bad result. So
yes. So yeah, that gets us to what the result might be. So score prediction time.
What do you got? I think this will probably be a 1-0. I don't think we're gonna score anything. So I think we're gonna lose 1-0.
Yeah. I think I originally had that before I going into this match preview. But yeah, I mean, talking through, and it's also, I mean, just the players themselves, it's like they're not match fit. They're gonna be chasing probably at some point, in terms of, you know, just working really, really hard defensively. It's gonna wear us down. I think there's more than one goal, unfortunately. I think this is a 3-0 loss, and you know, it's not gonna do wonders for our goal difference. It's not exactly a thing that in this league is a massive importance as well. So yeah, chalk it up. And you know, it's not a glimmering Saturday, unfortunately.
I couldn't really played a team that also is missing like 6 to 7 players. Like,
you know, right? It's the unlucky, you know, scheduling gods that have, you know, kind of. It's often the case on the road.
At least it wasn't Columbus again.
Yeah, I mean, if it was just Columbus, it was just, yeah, exactly. At that point, just, you know, can you forfeit before the match?
Yeah.
Because, like, we don't have to go through all this.
Is Cucho Hernandez called up to his nation's team?
I don't know, but, you know, it's a good question.
Be wild. Know, it's like, right? if you get Cucho and Nagby to just, like, demolish basically a USL team, that's right. Not funny.
It's really not. I mean, that therein lies the problem of the crux of the argument here. But, yep. So, we got 1-0, we got 3-0. What do you guys think? Let us know in the comments below. But that, guys, is pretty much the episode there and there, except for the question of the day. And the question of the day is, what would you guys like to see from us content-wise? We'd love to hear what you guys think. And, yeah, we'll consider doing what those suggestions are. So, get at us in those comments. And that's it for us today. Remember to subscribe to us if you haven't already. Share this episode and leave us a review and rating so we can pop up higher in your rankings. For Michael, I'm AJ. Thanks so much for listening.